Life Audio.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations.
We want families to come here and gain insightful strategies that empower them to successfully teach diverse learners at home.
Hosted by founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool, Peggy Ployer.
Our goal is that these powerful weekly conversations will boost your confidence to cultivate the best at-home learning environment for your student.
For more homeschool resources, go to spedhomeschool.com. You're listening to Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer. We'll start the conversation with Peggy and her guests next.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool, a nonprofit that empowers families to home educate diverse learners. To learn more, visit spedhomeschool.com. Here's Peggy Ployer.
Today, we are going to talk about sightful learning, unveiling the impact of vision on student success. And my guest today is Dr. Brenda Montecalvo. She has provided primary care optometry to her patients in a successful cutting-edge private practice setting for over 35 years. She's the author of a new book, Visual Secrets for School Success, and she is passionately sought after as an international speaker in the area of vision and learning. She's also the co-author of the American I'm messing that one up really bad. The ADA's Brain Injury Electronic Resource Manual. And I just want to welcome you, Brenda, to the show. I'm super excited about all you have to share. Just the things that Brenda shared with me ahead of the show just has my brain spinning about just so many things involved with vision that we don't even think about. So you've got a lot in store this hour as she shares just the importance of vision, and I think beyond what we think of as vision and how it impacts learning. So welcome, Brenda, to the show. I'm glad to have you here today.
Thanks so much, Peggy. I so appreciate the invitation, and I want to again applaud you in front of your audience of the work that you've done at helping parents homeschool their kids at a highest level possible and giving them great information. I wish this was available when I was taking care of my kids' education way back when. We didn't even have all this internet stuff. So
I know,
great resource. And thank you for, I know how much work it is to put together, you know, a podcast, and you've done an excellent job. So thank you for the invitation.
Oh,
and
you're welcome.
Honored to be able to be here with you and feel truly blessed that we can share information to help more parents understand exactly how vision can impact learning.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you so much. Yeah, It is a labor of love. And like you said, the reason this broadcast came about was I didn't have these resources. And so I know from that perspective, after homeschooling for 19 years, my kids that struggled, that it's just a resource that is widely sought after, and there wasn't anything there. So yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to thank ahead of time those of you that submitted questions. We will be building those into our conversation. Some of the questions, at least the questions that pertain to this topic, just know that there are some that you submitted after or that weren't on topic, and I will address those at the end after I finish talking with Brenda too. So hold on if you've submitted questions. They will be answered throughout this hour. But Brenda, I always ask my guests when we come on, just what made you so passionate about this topic? And I'd love for our listeners just to know that story, or just kind of what fuels what you do.
So it started, actually, my mom is an optometrist. She graduated in 1945. She loved optometry. She actually practiced for 70 years, loved it, every minute of it. So I actually inherited her passion for understanding vision and helping people improve their lives by understanding how to use it more efficiently. So when I had my own kids, we were in Montessori school originally, and then we moved out to the country, so we couldn't do that. We had to go to a public school, and going from no homework to lots of homework, coming home frustrated, trying to figure out what they're supposed to do, and the kids within 2 or 3 weeks were, you know, just not happy kids, and I always felt when they come home after school, they were my kids, not the school's kids, but, you know, spending all that time trying to figure out how to get the assignments done. Right. And so I took my knowledge that I knew about how all the vision impacts different subjects, and I created, we call them visual secrets. So once you have the right visual skills, you can use vision at a maximum potential. And there's over 40 visual skills important for learning, and they separate out into different subjects. So they aren't all important. Like, for example, there's math, spelling, reading, handwriting, and composition. Each one has their own list of separate skills that you need to be as successful as possible. Wow. So what I did created some fun activities for the kids to participate in. So in a very short time, they could learn to read much faster than all their older classmates. They could computate their math in their heads. They did spelling. They had their spelling words. They could learn them in 5 minutes or less. And that saved so much time, like their math facts, real quick and easy, rather than having to be tedious for them. So when you use vision the right way, you can read or write better, composition improves, handwriting improves, spelling can be faster. And so our kids were getting it then done in the classroom in between classes, or once people were trying to finish an assignment, they were able to grab another assignment and complete it. So very rare they bring books home and homework. And so, and we're able to achieve straight A's. And so they become very efficient learners. A lot of times we do it the hard way versus the easy way. And so what we did is to try to use vision can process information in a much faster, more comprehensive, and more expansive information in a shorter period of time than any of our other senses.
Wow, that's amazing. I want to hear more about this. I mean, you basically gave your kids their life back, because so many families are so bogged down with all this extra stuff that students need to work on outside of the school. And homeschool families aren't, they deal with the same thing. I mean, the class or the subject and the book work or whatever they're working on just extends out, and it pushes into other parts of the day that could be used for other things that, that enhance that learning instead of just, you know, working on the basics. So, I'm super excited about, what you have to share and what's all involved with this. So what is, like, a lot of people talk about having vision therapy. What exactly is that? And is this kind of what we're talking about?
So Optometric vision therapy actually is a diagnosed and specific treatment plan that does involve using over 180 different procedures to redevelop the visual skills that aren't how they're supposed to be. And so they use light therapy, lenses, prisms, occlusion, and the right type of activities are directed and monitored by trained individuals that are licensed and regulated. So that way the right things are done versus the wrong things to make sure that we don't create more problems than not. And so that's what optometric vision therapy is. I've done that for over 35 years and helped many kids improve. What I found, though, is a lot of times we help the visual skills improve, but we don't always see it reflected academically. So I created my book as a bridge between good visual skills and knowing how to use them in the classroom. And so it's a bridge to be able to do your math facts quicker or spell faster, read faster, those kinds of things. And so what happens is a lot of times splinter skills get in your way when you're first trying to learn stuff. And and a tiny example of that is you're teaching your child the right and left organization. That's a very important spatial concept for vision. So if you teach them L for left or I write with my right hand, that actually interferes with development of organization of visual space, which is absolutely critical for math and for reading. And so what happens is some of our really bright children we work with, that splinter skill's in our way. So we have to redevelop of how to get it internalized and utilized what we call automaticity. So like a good reader reads automatically without without effort. So, or like I tell people, if you're playing an athletic game or sport, when you play in the zone, we want learning to be playing in the zone. Instead of having to think about how to find the answer in the basics should be just automatic. And what the book does is it takes those visual skills that have been well developed and making sure you use them at their maximum potential. So we teach kids to read 1,000 words a minute and have good comprehension. You know, the kids that have 25 spelling words, they learn how to glance at them briefly and be able to spell them forward and backwards without much effort after they take them through a step-by-step process that is kind of more fun. So we try to create fun things rather than, like you said, tedious, you know, pushing kids and making it a negative. We try to, we really believe in positive reinforcement. We believe in, you know, self-assessment by the child rather than just telling, we ask. So we comply with a lot of the concepts. I'm not sure if you're familiar with how to talk so kids will listen, how to listen so kids will talk by Adele Faber. So we use those ideas in our programs to set the stage for success. So a tiny example of that, if a child tries to spell, let's say they spell reptile and they say R-E-P-T-I-L, and you'll say, instead of saying it's wrong, we like to say you have 6 of the 7 letters right. So we try to state what they did correctly versus what they did wrong. And so like, for example, we work a lot with support of good breathing and posture while they're doing visual activities. And so I might say, how's your posture versus sit up straight? So we all like to be coached that way versus told what to do in any age. And so we design our coaching on that. And that's why it's important to have the right directives and the right person guiding it in the vision therapy room. And then the activities we do in my book, we talk a lot about how to verbalize things. It's like if they get to a word they don't know, you know, sometimes you just tell them what it is and go on with the concept. You know, there's times when we can sound it out, but there's other times you don't need to keep doing it all the time. It becomes very negative for that child.
That's really neat that there's, it's the coaching part, not just the mechanics of it and in the format that it comes in, because kids can get discouraged. And we talked about that in my last week's broadcast and just how that leads to mental health issues. And, you know, just so much involved with that when kids just feel so beaten down by not being able to get something. And so I love that approach a lot.
And we do see that when a child has a lot of visual stress because they're not learning successfully, they actually create a situation where they tunnel vision down and they act like they're working in a tunnel. And the study was done in 1977 that over 70% of the kids in the classroom face that tunneling effect. And we liken it to when you're driving late at night in the rain and you're not sure where you're going, you feel like you're driving in a tunnel. So this happens to a lot of kids that feel like they're failures in the classroom. And so what we know that we can't just go in and do a bunch of eye movement exercises if we don't access and work with them to open up the peripheral vision. We do that with some color light therapy techniques. And then we delve into exercises, making sure their visual skills are ready. And then once they're ready, then we turn to coaching them on the different subjects. And we let the child pick the subject they want to be better at. And then I give them ways to make that better.
Well, that's really cool. After a word from our sponsor, we'll dive back into this conversation.
Is it hard to spark meaningful conversations with your kids? Whether you're a homeschool hero, planning activities for the next family vacation, or simply gathering around the dinner table, we've got something that can help. Introducing the Daily Family Conversation Starter by best-selling author Katie Clemens. This remarkable book offers 365 imaginative ways to connect with your children in just 5 minutes each day, with prompts like, "Who made you laugh today?" or "What would you do if you had a tail?" These simple questions open up a world of laughter, curiosity, and deeper connections. From dinner time to sleepy time, the Daily Family Conversation Starter is your key to creating memories that will last a lifetime. Don't wait to transform your family's daily routine into an adventure of discovery and fun. Grab your copy of the Daily Family Conversation Starter today, wherever books are sold.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
This is Empowering Homeschool Conversations, provided by Sped Homeschool. Go to spedhomeschool.com to get resources and support for teaching your unique learner at home.
How would a parent know if their child would benefit from this? I know we had a question from one parent who said that they have a child with a developmental disability, and they're not even sure, you know, how do you know if visual learning issues are even part of that process?
So anytime you have a diagnosis, learning disability, even some special needs kids with, you know, some significant issues like cerebral palsy. So it has been shown evidence-wise research that individuals that have some learning disabilities or have some sort of type of special needs, the incidence of vision problems are much greater, up to 90%. Wow. So what happens is when you've compromised brain function, you're going to compromise how the vision sends messages to the brain. So eyes and brain are actually same tissue. There's 14 muscles that have to work together to get the information to the brain. So it would be very rare for someone that doesn't have some sort of neurological compromise to not have some vision problems. So we take it as if they have a diagnosis, that diagnosis doesn't really change. However, can we make their visual system more efficient so they can overcome the challenges they face based on that diagnosis?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I think we find when we have a child, you know, like you said, with a label or a diagnosis, we kind of feel like we need to do everything. And but I can see how this part of the puzzle is kind of like one of those things that you need to address first. Is that kind of your thought on this too?
So they should have a complete comprehensive evaluation. In fact, the appendix in my book shows you how to make sure you do get the right eye exam. So an example would be if your eyes are dilated before you do testing that can affect learning, vision learning problems, you're not going to be able to assess the visual problems that would relate to learning. because when the eye is dilated, the eye is paralyzed. And so we kind of joke about a little bit in our group is that, you know, of all, when you go to the doctor, would you paralyze the heart to see if it works well?
Right.
No, you really wouldn't do that. But yet we paralyze the eye to see if it's functioning well in the classroom. That kind of makes no sense. So why don't we evaluate that visual system like it is working in the classroom and see how well it does? Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't be uncommon for me to have a child come in and we're working with them and I'll say, you know, do you have double vision when you're reading? Oh yeah, all the time. You know, parents had no idea. Or I'll say, do the words float up off the page? And they'll say, yeah, all the time. But nobody tells anybody they see like that because they think it's normal.
Right, exactly.
And so many times these problems do not get identified because the eyesight 20/20 is fine. There's over 40 visual skills for learning. Only one is 20/20 eyesight. And so once they pass the screening, everybody thinks their vision's fine. We don't need to delve any further. And so unfortunately, then those kids feel like, oh, it's me, I'm stupid, rather than their vision. So often I tell kids, I had a little guy said, you know what, you're really smart. And he goes, no, I'm too stupid to learn because that's what people have told him. And I said, you know, no, it's your vision that's not sending the message to your brain. And once we help you do that, you know, you've learned how to work hard. Once it gets easy to send the message, you're going to put those two together and be very successful and turn around and become an A student. And they do. And they feel good about themselves. And so by helping empower them to use their vision at that level, they've accomplished something at a young age that most kids haven't. And so when they get up to the college area, kids that struggle when they're young but overcome it, they do way better in college than those that are smart that don't struggle.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's a giant leap. And I've heard that too. And sometimes it even happens in the high school when things start ramping up super fast. They've been able to keep up for so long, or they've got a little glitch that they've been able to kind of, you know, cover up or you know, compensate for. And then all of a sudden it just gets way out of hand. And and so, so best to catch those things. And, but I'm assuming that even for students who we don't see a lot of struggles with, or maybe do fairly well on this exam, can also benefit from a lot of this training. Is that correct?
Great, great insight, Peggy. Absolutely. So why not teach your student that's on the way to college how to read twice as fast? Why not?
Right.
Just think how much more time they're going to have to learn the tough stuff and get to a higher level, right? And so math facts, you know, that's one piece, but math concepts, geometry, algebra, those are all, math is measuring space lots of different ways in four dimensions, X, Y, Z axis over time. And so once we get the visual system making right visual judgments, that they're faster and more efficient at it, like composition. We find that children that are poor at composition don't use language very much. They're very limited in their sentence structures. And one thing with homeschoolers, they actually are in my, we have a lot of homeschoolers in our patient base. And so they often are much better at using words than some of the other groups, except for now social media and all that is taking away our language skills.
Yeah.
But if you can't speak correctly, you can't compose correctly. And so we have lots of ways of getting kids to talk and create verbiage so that they can transfer that to composition. So if they visualize what we want them to write about, then they have a better ability to do that and create that creativity. On LinkedIn, creativity is the second most sought after word on resumes out there. And so one way that they showed neurologically, based on research at very good high-level institutions, is that visualization is one piece of helping creativity work at a higher level and making a visual picture. And that's one of the things we work a lot with when we're trying to help kids improve how they use their vision and how they remember what they see.
Oh, that's amazing. Yes. We've taught kids how to memorize and how to, you know, like fill in the blank and answer the right, you know, question A, B, C, D. But that creativity part, I've seen it too. And it's amazing just how much of a commodity or how much that is sought after by employers, because it's you don't value it until it's too late. And I love that homeschoolers, a lot of them think outside the box, and their kids are creative. And but the issue is, I think when we have a kid with a disability, and I know I've even interviewed some guests that said we tend to talk less to those children because we just assume that we don't need to say anything, but we should be saying actually more because that conversation does help with language skills and a whole bunch of other things too.
Absolutely. And yeah. And knowing where they are, like when we work with special needs, you know, we simplify some of the sentence structure, certainly always having the conversation with the patient. But knowing that if they have a little bit of auditory memory issue along with their visual memory issue, that if you give them long sentences, they can't keep that all together and organize it. So that's a visual spatial organization of sentence structure. So depending upon how many instructions you can give, sometimes you have to just give a little bit to digest and then add to it, depending upon how much compromised of the cognitive level they have. Okay. And so we rearrange that based on that child's need.
So a lot of what you're talking about, some of it at least, it sounds like executive functioning skills, because I've interviewed people that talk about that. So is that intertwined in this?
Absolutely. In fact, I have a whole lecture on creativity and composition, and part of that is going through the executive functions. And so I think probably what happens is a lot of the things that we do, if you imagine, if you cut the visual portion out of it, it doesn't really function very well. So vision really is involved in everything we do in one aspect or another. Even if you close your eyes, you're still using vision. And based on previous experiences or predicting what's going to happen, you've got visual images happening all of the time. And so executive functions really play a huge role in vision. They're everywhere in the brain, has different visual information that's communicating back and forth with our other senses, auditory and kinesthetic, proprioceptive, vestibular, but they are all integrated. So neurologically, vision is very highly innervated. So we have 12 cranial nerves. Of all the 12 cranial nerves, one is eyesight. Three of them are eye movements. Of 12 cranial nerves that run our whole body. So if you think of the dominance of how God created our visual systems, he gave us 14 muscles to move our eyes and focus. And those muscles are not related to 20/20 eyesight at all. And so those muscles are most likely damaged during birth trauma, during falls, during major illnesses, concussions, and things like that because of where the pathways occur in the brain. So everywhere in the brain, almost, not almost every, but probably 80% of the brain fires when you have to require certain kinds of eye movements. And so if you damage the brain, it's really greatly likely that the eye movements can be impacted. In fact, the concussion research shows that eye movements are one of the highest indicators that concussion is an issue for that that patient. And so that's just one. So that eyesight's one. So eye movements involve three. So there's another 37 visual skills besides just eye movements. But that eye movement tells you where you are in the world and where everything else is. And it maps the world for you and tells your brain where you are. And so those are very critical pieces. Now when your kid gets up to driving, you want them to have good ability to organize where they are and everything else. You don't want them to be mismatched. But there's kids that have convergence excess. They're going to think the stop sign's closer. Convergence insufficiency, they're going to think the stop sign's further. So if they're pulling out in front of a car, you want them to make the right judgment when to pull out, not the wrong one. So all of where our visual systems work and how our eyes align and how they point together are going to impact them not only in the classroom, but for sports, for driving, just and even walking, just moving through space, especially for our special needs individuals, because they don't always have a lot of good feedback as to where they actually are. And so kids that are like have some paralysis, their eyes can usually move in lots of directions. So we actually access some of the building of cognition or thinking by using eye movements directed and moving and following targets, because that's one of the better muscle systems that are still intact.
Okay. Wow. So question, I've had some cranial adjustments before, like by my chiropractor. Does that help with those nerves?
So yes, cranial sacral manipulation is really excellent for allowing the fluid to flow through our cortical processing. So if we suspect that a child that we work with during the evaluation has asymmetrical plate structure, I do refer for cranial sacral adjustments by a local osteopath. And so there's no question if it's not quite how it should be and the flow isn't working, can impact that. So we definitely collaborate with a lot of professionals to make sure that all of the issues are dealt with. I mentioned earlier the constricted fields. Sometimes those kids are trying to avoid some stress that might be, they might have an abusive situation. But if I open the fields, now somebody has to help them deal with that. They're trying to avoid that. So then we have to correlate with psychology and counseling when we know we're opening a field that they're protecting themselves with. So we have to really think as an optometrist of all the aspects that are impacting vision, how we impact it, but how the others impact us.
Right. Yes. Because, it can be a defense mechanism too.
Absolutely.
I never even thought about anything with that. What about like a student who is legally blind?
An individual that has legal blindness, there's lots of levels of legal blindness. So the most severe would be greater than 2200 best corrected. The least, you know, they go down from there 2100 down to 2050. And so there's different levels. So depending upon where they are, we utilize a low vision specialist that can make sure that we maximize their vision as much as possible. But then when we go and look at the other aspects of it, visual thinking skills, visual memory, eye movements. So those are easily worked with. We just have to enlarge targets appropriately. So a lot of times people think when a child can't see, they just make things bigger. But you need the right expanded letter. It has to be thicker, not just bigger. But the thing is that the child has a field defect plus low vision, you make it too big, you're in the wrong place. So a really good assessment by a low vision optometrist, we do have one in our office, that can make sure that we maximize the visual space that works the best, and we can get as big as possible so they can still see it, and which distance and what magnification they need. So we need to start there for sure. But then we can take to other levels for coordinating the visual system, just like we do patients that have good eyesight.
Okay, that's good to know. So when you're talking about these critical visual skills, what are some of the top ones that you focus on?
actually, we think they're all important.
Yes.
So what we do is depending on, you know, we first look at, we're very function oriented. So what's the goal? So if it's handwriting, let's say, so the most important one in handwriting is peripheral vision and pursuit or tracking. So following a target. Those are two really important ones for handwriting. So for spelling, it's sequencing and visual sequencing and memory, visual memory. Visualization, visual memory. For math, now that has a lot more. And so math is a lot more about spatial organization, orientation of the XYZ axis over time. So almost everything like eye movements, pursuit, saccades, accommodative focusing, being able to stay focused on your target, where you know things are, convergence, excess, convergence, urgency. So there's like 20 things in math that are all important to understand higher levels of math. So we find like a little tiny pearl I love to share with audiences is when I do talks for groups on how to help use vision to improve math skills. We live in near Dayton, Ohio, so we have Wright Patt Air Force Base. We have a lot of engineers. So I've discovered that all of our engineers that are in our audiences, they love to count steps. They still count steps as an adult. When I work with people that hate math, they never remember counting steps. So what does counting steps have to do with math? So what I discovered is that the distance in space between 1 and 2 is the same as it is between 52 and 53. So people that don't understand math, they think the bigger the number is, the further apart they are. So that makes adding and subtracting really tough. It doesn't make any sense. And so they have to memorize everything, and they're forced to do time tests, not in homeschoolers, thank goodness. But that's a negative that, you know, they think they're bad at math when in fact that's a mindset. They're not bad at math. They were poor at memorizing and doing things fast, but that doesn't mean they're bad at math. So we try to change their mindset. So what we do with kids that hate math, we have them count steps, right? But they have to be the same size. Counting fingers doesn't work because they're not the same size.
Okay.
And so a lot of Montessori uses the manipulatives, but all of them are the same size, so they can understand truly what does five mean. Five are five pieces, and those five pieces are five times bigger than one piece. So that visual spatial matching, identification, and discrimination is critical for understanding how numbers relate to each other.
Okay. Wow. I count steps. I have a degree in physics. So
that
makes sense.
So you proved my theory. Once in a great while, I find one, but it's a very high percentage. And the interesting thing I find, Peggy, is the better you like math, the longer you count steps in your life.
Really? Yeah, so I do it every time.
You're still counting. So you're a math person.
And it's steps I go up every day at my house. Yes.
Yep. And you probably know because you have spatial memory how far you are. Like if you are in how many steps it takes you to get to your car, how many steps it takes you to get to your office. And you know exactly because you have a numerical spatial concept of all the space you've visually experienced and physically moved through.
Yeah. And my husband always says, how do you know, like when you pack a car, where everything's going to fit before you even put it in? And I've always been that way. And I just, it's just, you know, I just do. And that's probably why. Never understood that before. Yeah. Well, that's interesting that like you said, every subject has its, you know, the critical things related to the subject. And so more than likely, you know, if a student wants to improve, you know, one thing, then you have a focus on that. So tell us a little bit about, you know, did you want to share a little bit about research as far as the brain and vision and just how we talked last week on our show a lot about how the brain's plasticity works. So I'd love to hear just a little bit just of how, you know, as far as students who undertake like trying to learn these skills, what's involved, you know, as far as like, are you changing pathways? Are you creating new pathways? What's actually going on in the brain when you start working on these skills?
So neuroplasticity and dendrogenesis, what an exciting time that we know that it actually happens. And when I went to school way back when, we were taught in school that we only get so many brain cells, we never get any new ones.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason they discovered that back then was because they didn't realize those brand new brain cells, which is the neurogenesis, they occur in several areas of the brain, and a lot of those are the memory areas. Those brand new cells, if you are doing things that are not new, interesting, and a little challenging, those cells don't stay. And they die right away. And so what you have to do is create environments where you have that kind of a situation so that that brand new cell will dendrite over to a previous cell that's already existing. And that's called dendrogenesis. And so what we try to do is, first of all, create an environment where those brand new cells are not lost. And the beauty of our brains is that we have neuroplasticity happening every day for our entire life. That doesn't ever stop. But what happens is we get to a point as we become adults, we do the same thing every day, right? So nothing is challenging our brains. So as you age, we work with aging as well. There's a lot of really great things you can do to stop your memory losses, the natural ones. And so if you do new things, something new, example, if you've never played a piano, learn to play a piano. It has to be interesting and a little challenging. right? Okay. So if you are trying to do exercise, a lot of people ask, you know, can I just do this at home? What happens is they keep doing the same things over and over and over and over again, whether or not creating neurogenesis and dendrogenesis, because the child becomes bored. And you don't know how to coach them through the challenges because it's not your area. You're just trying to do some cookbook things. And so it works sometimes, but it's like anything we do. You know, if I wanted to learn what you do, Peggy, you do some really cool things with scars, and you just told me all about it beforehand. Can I learn what you do by watching a YouTube video for an hour?
Probably it would be dangerous.
Yes. And so, you know, if you coached me, though, I bet I could get to that endpoint much quicker because you are the expert. And so it's kind of the same with using vision to guide it through those processes to help them get to that neurogenesis and dendrogenesis. And so you have to be a very good observer to find out if that child is bored, and you have to create a lot of new activities for them. Even though I might still be working on an eye movement, I have to change the procedure so that it's still interesting. And I have to coach them to feel good about that challenge so they can change their mindset and believe that they can, because that belief system that you can do it allows you to relax your system and your vision's going to function better.
Yes.
And so that's kind of how we kind of create that. That's just the neuroplasticity and dendrogenesis research has been around for quite some time, but the it's newer and newer and newer. So the pathways are there. So there's two things, though, now that I've learned with working with creativity. If we create too much automaticity, that means effortless learning. We do stifle creativity a little bit. So that's the beauty of the homeschoolers. Yeah. Homeschoolers can take their environment and put them in a, outside for an hour. They can put them in a different room that the child's not used to.
Right. And then you can take rabbit trails when the child's interested, too, because that's when the best learning happens, and the kids remember that too.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's novel, interesting, and created that curiosity.
Yes.
And so when you create curiosity, your learning curves go up astronomically. When it's boring and not fun, then it's very hard to create that learning aha. We want the aha. It's more important to have the aha than always to get the right answer.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So you've kind of answered the question one parent had asked about therapy and trying to, you know, should they work with a professional or not? And so, yes, there's things that professionals can observe that parents usually, because they're not trained, are not going to catch all of the things. But you did give us a free resource that I will put in the show notes, though. And can you tell us what is in that free resource that you shared with
us? So the free resource that hopefully you have somewhere, there's your link right there.
Yep.
And the reason I put it like that is I just discovered this morning that if you just type my name, Brenda Montecalvo, it takes you to a BrendaMontecalvo.com that's not mine, so don't go there. If you type it if you type exactly this one, it'll take you to that resource and my website. So now I got to go fix that. I told somebody I must be becoming more popular. So, what I did, so the very first thing is set your stage for learning. Right? So one whole chapter in my book is what you can do to create the most positive learning environment for your child. So we talk about lighting, sound, temperature, positioning. If you have poor position, if you have poor posture when reading and writing, you're going to cause vision problems. We have a lot of individuals with digital devices that are causing a tremendous amount of eye strain and difficulties. It talks about how to set your learning environment up to make it comfy and cozy and have it a positive learning environment. Think about, we go to coffee shops now and have a nice warm cup of coffee and sit and read, and it feels good, right?
Right.
So we want to create that feel-good world. You know, I never forget going from Montessori to public schools. My kids didn't wear their shoes. They could sit on the floor. They could sit in a beanbag chair. Their learning curves were huge. They loved everything they did in the classroom. They went to the classroom, and they had to sit on hard chairs and keep their hard shoes on all day.
Yeah.
And they had done the rules that made them feel negative and they were afraid. And so, you know, why put a child in an environment that's hard and not comfortable? Why not have it a positive? But positioning is so important. And those three resources show that if the book is closer than knuckles to elbow, it's going to change that visual process and it's going to change your learning curves. And Daryl Boyd Harmon studied 7,000 kids to prove that many years ago, the right position and paper position is critical for processing information. And so it takes you through that. It talks about those different pieces. So there's three different resources there. We're also putting together a brand new resource. It's not quite available yet, but that resource is going to give you some reminder cards of what you can do for fun in math, spelling, reading, handwriting, composition.
Okay.
And so, And so anybody that wants to connect with me, they can access the resources. They can connect with me on my website and we'll put them in our database and we'll send out information. We do free webinars on vision and learning and things like that.
Oh, awesome. That's good. So we had one other question from a parent about lazy eye and lazy eye, that her son's eyes aren't working together and then writing. So how are those two processes connected? Maybe just to give her some insight in dealing with.
So I look at these two as visual circuits. Okay. And the physicists here will appreciate this. Mm-hmm. So these are two visual circuits, highly electrical, and we want them to point at the same place when we're using our visual system. Mm-hmm. So we find when people have penmanship or handwriting issues, first of all, they don't have the right setup. There's 15 things you have to do right to have good penmanship. So I know it's a lot. It's probably when we coach parents. This is the hardest thing to coach because you have to watch so many things at once.
Right.
But you have to hold the pencil right. You have to sit right. You have to have the paper right. But your eyes have to guide your pencil tip. So you're not supposed to look at the tip of the pencil. The eyes are ahead of it. So we coach kids to look ahead of where their pencil is going. So when you hold a pencil up, if you hold it up and your fingers are here at the very end of it, and then you're trying to write, you can't even see what you're writing.
You can't see it, right.
So you have to hold it farther enough apart so the eyes can tell where you're going. And if you have the poor posture and you're covering everything up and you're off to one side, you have no idea where you're going. And the other thing is homeschool has the beauty of doing this. They can stay big. So I believe we show how to have the lined paper with the dashes in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
And keeping it longer rather than shorter periods of time. So until they're ready to go smaller, don't go smaller. And so even erase boards, sometimes you have to go to an erase board just to get them to feel where those letters go. But their eyes have to tell you where you're going. There's a little experiment we do. If you look at the tip of your pen and write your name versus looking ahead and write your name, you'll notice it's much more nice and neat. So what happens is kids get bad at it. They start too soon and they have poor penmanship, poor grip. So you got to wait till they're ready. And I know it's hard to believe, but I don't see automaticity of handwriting until fourth and fifth grade.
Yeah.
So we make kids do it at 4 years of age so they can't manipulate these two fingers so they fist it. So these are our strongest two fingers. And so that's the one that's managing it and they don't have to use much effort. So we kind of re-coach them on that. And we're not occupational therapists because if they need that, we'd refer for that. But we coach them in how to set the stage so they can get their eyes to guide. And a lot of kids hold their breath when they write, so I have to breathe at the same time. Because what happens when you hold your breath, you shut down your peripheral retina. Oxygen reduces. And so peripheral, you need to know where you're going. If you can't see your peripheral, you have no idea where you're going. So those are just some little keys.
So fascinating.
And if you have the two eyes not aligned, you could get some double vision. And so the double vision can affect handwriting. So what happens, kids just stop looking when they're writing. They stop using their eyes because the information isn't working. So they just pretty much write blindly.
Wow. Yeah. And that just leads to so many more problems as they continue that down that path too.
Yeah. And once they're ready, their visual systems are ready. I mean, it only takes 2 weeks to fix penmanship. It's very easy. It takes 5 minutes a night for 2 weeks. We spell it out details in my book on handwriting of how if you take 3 letters a night, you can help change it, but you got to watch all those pieces while they're practicing.
Yeah. So you talked about your book. So where can people find it and what can they find in it?
So I did bring it with me. So it's Visual Secrets for School Success. Mm-hmm. And it is, I am the author. And so you can find it anywhere online, Amazon, et cetera. You can buy it there. You can also, there's a link on my website, brendamontecalvo.com. And so that's how you would access the book. And sometimes, okay, you know, we work with groups. Sometimes they want to buy in bulk. If you contact me, we'll give you a special pricing if you need to have a reduced rate. So that's where it's located.
Awesome. Well, this has been such a fascinating conversation. It definitely broadened my view of how vision affects learning. And I know our audience is going to be greatly blessed by all the information that you shared. And I'm excited about your book and just as a resource to be able to refer people to for just finding out more information and having this conversation out there for them to listen to. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Peggy. And again, I'm honored to be here and definitely truly blessed to be able to share information. And I hope that this just little piece of information will help people understand how important it is to not forget about vision. And yeah, if you haven't had your kids eye examined, you know, we start at 6 months. I do want to say infancy.org, I-N-F-A-N-T.
Yes, you were talking about that.
You can get a full eye exam before 12 months of age anywhere in the country here in the United States. It's complimentary. There's a whole list on website, and it's run by our organization. It's not run by me at all. I just happen to be part of it. But, you know, get started soon, early. Don't skip eye exams. They're as important as your teeth. So I can't tell you how many people get their teeth examined twice a year, but they don't even think about their eyes. Right. So please take good care of your eyes. Eat healthy. Spinach is number one vegetable you can eat for your eyesight.
Really?
Yes, ma'am. So be healthy.
I eat a lot of that.
Care of your eyes. I believe you should have a, you know, if you have a lifetime of good, healthy eyes, when you're 100, if your eyes work well, life is very good because you can do a lot of things like reading. If you lose your sight or lose your ability to process visual information, it really interferes with function of daily living activities.
It does. Yeah. That's just fascinating information. I will get the link for that infantc.org and make sure I put that in the show notes as well so that people can find that. And thank you for sharing that information too. And your eyes are
welcome.
So important. Thank you for just expanding that for us. And God put it all together. And just it's amazing how our bodies just work when we know what we need to do to make them work and work better. So, yeah. So thank you so much. And thank you for the work that you do. It's just an inspiration to me too, to see somebody out there just continually informing and researching and sharing. That's exciting. So yeah.
Thank you, Peggy.
Well, yes. Thanks for being on the show, Brenda. And I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be with us today.
Have a great day.
All right. You too. Okay. Bye. All right. So the end of this show has been changing just because a lot of you have been posting questions. So after we go through the just the general information that our guest has brought, I really want to address some of your the questions that you submitted. So the first one that Charlene had asked is, I've just started homeschooling my 15-year-old son. If he takes the SAT at school and is not up to his grade level, can the school fail him? So if the SAT is actually administered by an outside source, not the school, it may be held at the school, but the SAT is just a gauge for colleges for entrance exams. So it's completely separate. So don't feel like if your child's taking that exam and they don't do well, that it's going to reflect anything, because the school is not teaching your son, you are. I do want to let you know too, though, if your child has a hard time with tests but they still want to go to college, there are some other options instead of taking the ACT or SAT. You can go the route of going to a tech school or a community college where you would just take the entrance exam that is at the school. And a lot of times those are not timed. So your student can go in and take it little bits at a time on their computer there. And if they need any classes that help them get up to the level that they would need to start earning credits, that the community colleges also offer those too. So there's lots of different options for students who do struggle to still get into college and do college level courses that is maybe just a little easier than going the full-blown route of doing the SAT, the ACT, and then trying to hit that four-year college right away. A lot of times the community colleges have smaller classes. My two kids that went to college both took that route, and they were very glad that they did. My son went 2 years and then transferred. There's no test required. It's just the grades that they have earned and credits from the community college that goes into their acceptance and usually an entrance paper or something like that. My daughter's deciding to transfer after 1 year just so she can get some internships and scholarships. But anyways, so no, don't worry about anything reflecting on your child if they don't do well on those tests. Those tests are just part of, they're just taken at the schools as they're the hosts. They don't even get the information for what your child has scored on that test, unless you want to share that. So I hope that answers your question, Charlene. And now we have another question, totally different. How to manage anger in homeschooling? Alana, you probably have heard some of my other interviews. I did a recent interview with Heidi St. John about some anger issues I had as a parent when I first started homeschooling, and just how that really consumed my life, and really how God came in and changed my heart and taught me a lot of things. I don't know if you're trying to manage anger from yourself or your child. We kind of had both of it going on in our household. A lot of it is just realizing that it's either related to sensory issues sometimes. So definitely look into for my children and I, we all have EDS, which was misdiagnosed as autism for my oldest son. And so our ability to be calm and to reset that vagus nerve was not as accessible as some other people's. And so we were on edge all the time. And so learning how to reset your vagus nerve to get into that calm place. I did an interview, I was last December with my friend Lisa, and we did some techniques on how to reset that your vagus nerve that might be extremely helpful for you. But also for your child too. So if it's sensory related, sometimes it's control related. We want our kids to do well, and we want to control every situation around us. We have to realize that we are not in control. God's in control. We have to learn how to step back and just really allow God to work. And God works a lot through messy stuff. That's a really hard thing. But it teaches us a lot of lessons about patience and perseverance. One of the things that really helped me was to realize that instead of me being the one that my child was to battle with, I was to be their coach. And a lot of times our kids feel really safe with us, and so they pull us into what I like to visualize as a boxing ring. And they want to fight it out with us, whatever they're struggling with, because we're safe. Sometimes not so safe if you have an anger issue. But I had to visualize in my brain that my child was fighting against something, but it wasn't me. Maybe I was the safe one to throw something out at, to yell at, to hit. But could I, as the adult, take myself out of that boxing ring, that wherever they're battling, and say, you know what, I'm your coach. Let's figure this out together. Let's come up with a plan so that you can fight this, and I'm behind you. And that whole shift really helped me to understand that that was my role. And if I could get myself out of the situation and we could all calm down, then we could battle what was ahead of all of us together. And that's what it's really all about. So so those are just a couple of my suggestions about managing anger in your homeschooling. A lot of times God just really taught me that a lot of it was character issues, either in myself or my children. I'm very much a perfectionist, and my kids, some of them are too. And so when we want everything to be perfect and it doesn't turn out that way because life isn't perfect, we can get very upset, and it can be very frustrating that that we're still battling against these things. But realizing mistakes happen, we have to learn to say, I just didn't work out, but what can we learn from this? Let's take this as an experiment instead of end all be all that we have to get it right the first time. I've got a series of articles actually on the Sped Homeschool website about parenting anger. And so that might actually help if you kind of dive into that. I also authored a book called Be Angry and Train Your Kids. It's a very short book. It takes you through a lot of what I talked about in that blog series, and just helps you to understand maybe some places where that anger is cropping up and how to deal with it. I also talk about sibling rivalry and how to deal with that. And so hopefully those are some good resources for you to be able to start conquering that. God has a plan. He says, be angry, but do not sin. I used to just hate reading that verse, but now I understand that I can have that anger. That anger creates a lot of energy, but that energy has to be fueled or put in towards the right direction so that we can solve the problem, not make it worse. And then we have to teach our kids how to do the same thing. Those were the questions that were submitted ahead of time. Thank you for doing that. If you do not know how to find that, just go to the Sped Homeschool website and subscribe to our newsletter, and you'll get an email out before we do our broadcast. And then you can submit your questions for our guest or for me to answer afterwards. And we're happy to do that. So, and also make sure you check out Brenda's website, and the free resources. I'm going to include those in my show notes, but it's brendamontecalvo.com. And so you can click on those links in the show notes and find her resources there. And just see how vision is affecting your child's learning. So thanks everybody for joining me. And next week we are going to be talking about navigating the decision to home educate. So I really want you to, if you're on the fence about homeschooling, I know some of you are, you watch the show and you're like, I really want to do that, but I don't know. Bring your questions for my guest. Invite friends who you know are maybe on the fence. Have them submit their questions. We would love to address those and really help you to understand how to navigate that. But until then, have a great week, everybody. God bless. And I will see you next time, same time, same place. Bye, everybody.
I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you'll find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
This has been Empowering Homeschool Conversations with Peggy Ployer.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.